talk to a regulatory person. They will be able to guide you to start getting that information together because it is some detailed stuff. It's going to come down to putting together some sort of chart for whoever is going to inputting this information into the system.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's segment here on the Product and Packaging Powerhouse. And guys, I am your host, Megan Young Gamble, Global Project Manager, Packaging Specialist, and an everyday consumer of all your favorite products. As I share with you on our sessions, if you always want to add to my lipstick and my lip gloss category, please be my guest. I only have hundreds of tubes and counting, so always feel free to add to it. And guys, I am so excited about today's conversation. It's a timely conversation. It is something that all beauty brands are starting to really evaluate, which is regulatory and all things MOCRA. And so today I have the honor and privilege to have powerhouse guest, Ms. Ariana Farina. She is a OTC cosmetic and regulatory and quality specialist and consultant with her own independent practice. Shout out to the entrepreneurs and business owners. And so she has over 20 years of experience, guys, specializing in regulatory compliance, quality system management, and also making sure that she's helping cosmetic, makeup, personal care products, and OTC brands be compliant. I always tell brands, if you do not hire anybody else on your team, regulatory should be the first person on your team. And so, Ariana, welcome to the show and thanks for being the guest.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for saying that. Yes, I agree. Regulatory and quality. I wish more people said that.
Yes. I know somebody said that they was like, well, how are you a service provider? And you're saying if you don't hire anybody else, it's not you, it's regulatory. I said, because I understand the importance of being compliant. I cannot help you with packaging if you don't have the information to put on the packaging for it to be compliant in the marketplace. So that's why I am a big advocate for having regulatory specialists and consultants on brands teams. So with us getting started for today, Ariana, share a little bit about yourself and how you got into the regulatory and the quality industry.
Well, the honest truth.
Yes.
The truth is, I came out of UCLA with a biochemistry degree and I didn't have any money and I'm not from LA. So I knew I wanted to stay here. I didn't know what I wanted to do yet. And the highest paying job I could get was at Herbalife in the regulatory department. I knew I needed a car. I knew I needed to pay rent or else I had to leave because I'm from Chicago. So I, you know, got the job and was like, okay, great. What's regulatory? But that truly, I think, and unfortunately, you know, there aren't a lot of training systems yet for what I do. So a lot of people don't know that maybe this is their passion. It turned out to be mine, but it is something I fell into. And I think that is a kind of a common story for regulatory. I worked there for a couple of years, and then I moved on to a company called HCT Packaging. I think they were quite small way back when. It was only like 20-something people in the office. I was only one of like the first couple people on the Fields Good team there. And now they're part of one of the largest turnkey suppliers in the world. So I was there for about 7 years, helped them grow from small to large. And then when I moved on to a company called Hatch Beauty, turnkey supplier as well, same sort of thing where very small, they needed somebody to kind of come in, build a team, create the systems and, you know, also manage the day to day. And so I did that for a few years and then I'd become sort of ingrained in the regulatory community here, I guess, in the US, you know, not just here in LA, but I was on the IBA Tech Reg Committee. And I decided that, you know, this is, I think a lot of people have this need, but not everybody can afford to hire somebody in-house. And I, you know, just from what I saw, there was a lot of need for consulting. And there were a couple out there, but there was a lot of need. So about 8 years ago, I went independent and I service, you know, small companies that want to grow large. So same sort of thing, kind of like helping them figure out the, what are the highest risk things first, like let's handle that. And then kind of building a system that's growable as they grow. And then I also work with like Fortune 500s, where it's more kind of coming in and reworking what they already have. And of course, special projects. A lot of people think, oh, it's only small companies that use regulatory. But really, honestly, even large ones do too, because there's just so much to keep up on. Every single day, it's me monitoring something new that's coming up. And whether it's a new regulation, a change in regulation. And so I did that. I also taught the first, wrote and taught, because again, there's not many resources for it, the first regulatory course over at the Fashion Institute and their beauty program. So that's like for makeup and this industry, cosmetics and such. And then also I am on the board of directors for the California Society of Cosmetic Chemists as the regulatory chair. So at the monthly meetings, I give the regulatory update. Anybody can attend those, by the way. We have one, I think, coming up real soon. And I talk for about 5 minutes and then we have like a featured speaker. I try to get in and out, you know, do all the painful. And everybody just said, we hope it's good news this time. That's what they always say before I get up there. And sometimes it's not, but I do my best to say it with a smile.
Yes, I love that. And I love how you're smiling through regulatory, because a lot of people that I speak with, they're like, regulatory is just like the red liner. You know, they're always telling us what we cannot do, what we cannot say. And it's like, yeah, but it's for your own good, right? You know, so as you mentioned, like assessing like the highest risk and assessing what brands are doing present day, to even with Fortune 500 companies, you always want to make sure you're being compliant at the end of the day, because the regulations are changing. We have MOCRA here. We now have state regulations. Packaging guidelines and regulations are changing. We're in this age of everything is constantly changing. And so my question to you is, with you being a regulatory and a quality consultant, how do you stay abreast of all these different changes across the US and then even starting to look international?
It really is just a daily grind. You know, I'm always waking up seeing what's going on. You know, at this point, I kind of know where a lot of the information might appear or is housed, where the regulation is. And so I'll check my updates. They'll send out emails, some won't. And you just got to kind of keep watching it. Also, one of the best resources is over time is just your friends. You know, you have the other people that work in the industry and they hear the rumblings of something that's going on and you kind of information share and figure out what's up. And so over 20 years, you know, that's honestly one of the best things too. A lot of people think of us regulatory folks as kind of just the people in the back room, you know, their little computer is not very social, right? But honestly, we do have to talk to each other to do a good job. Just one other thing you said too, I know that we're kind of the redliners saying what you can't do, but also the way I like to approach it usually is, I don't like to say what you can and cannot do. I like to say, oh, this is high risk, this is low risk. Because frankly, there are a lot of gray areas. It's interpretation of regulation, just how I know how it's played out in the past. Maybe it's a medium level risk. I think maybe it'll go this way, it won't go this way. So in the end, I'm just trying to, don't kill the messenger, you know, but I'm just trying to provide information so good business decisions can be made. Some companies might say, we're totally fine with a medium level risk situation or whatever it may be. Other companies are like, forget that. We've seen it go sideways. We don't want to mess with that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point, because even like with me working as a project consultant with the brands, you know, they're like, well, what can we do? I'm like, well, this is high level risk, this is moderate, and this is low risk. So I do like how you preface that, you know, really assessing the risk level, because a lot of times, you know, brands in different teams, they'll say redliners, like, well, we can't do this. And it's like, well, it's for your own good, you know, but what level of risk are you willing to take, you know, to say any type of things or do certain practices, et cetera. So that's why I say regulatory should be one of the first people on your team, even as you're growing your brand, starting your brand, growing it and scaling it, because they'll be able to provide insight to you all, brands and companies alike, to make sure that everything is cohesive and being able to assess the level of risk, you know, for your products and the brands that you're putting out. So I love that. And so I want to go back to one other topic you mentioned, which is how you develop the actual regulatory course at FIDM. So I think more schools should really adopt the same practices to incorporate really teaching and educating our future generation around regulatory and compliance. And so I'm curious to know, since you wrote and taught the first regulatory course at FIDM, how did you determine like what should be talked about and what should be taught to these future generation leaders?
So, I thought a lot of different approaches of how to do this, right? And I know there are other forums you can go to learn about regulation, what's coming up, et cetera. And I didn't want to be the same, but I also want to, kind of make sure these folks were off on the right foot. You know, these people were starting their careers. Some had internships, some didn't. And I wanted to make sure that they understood the concept of regulatory. So I thought, okay, should I just be teaching basic regulation? Okay, yes. Should I be doing updates right now on the latest stuff? Maybe not so much. Let's try and not overwhelm them. I was also looking at kind of my who were the people taking the course, and it was a lot of people who want to get into marketing, product development. Frankly, they were maybe being forced to take my course as part of their curriculum to graduate. As a matter of fact, when I spoke with the head of the department, I said, "Are you sure you want to torture these folks with this class?" And I said, "Because I'm going to leave this up to you." I said, "This is going to be something that they may go, ugh." But she said, "No, they need to know it." And I said, "Okay." So in the end, what I sort of landed on was teaching them the basics, but also how to ask the right questions, right? Because that was oftentimes if there was any headbutting or there was some information missed, or knowing when to ask questions and how to ask those questions, and how to collect. Because if you're working in product development or something, you're oftentimes collecting information for regulatory to analyze. How to collect the correct information? What is terminology for documentation? Stuff like that. And that's really how I approached it. And when I taught the course, the whole time I was like, oh gosh, am I torturing them? Sometimes I thought yes, sometimes I thought no. But to this day, I have people still approach me and say, I learned the most from it. I did have some people that even said, oh, I'm thinking about getting into regulatory now. Now, I don't know if they were just saying that to kiss my butt or something, trying to get the right grade. But I was shocked that I didn't think these folks that had gone to this program to get into marketing and everything would even sort of consider this profession. So I'm going to take it as face value. And yes, it was so interesting. They just couldn't help themselves.
Yeah. And you know what? I think it's something really important that really should be taught in, your post-secondary education, because the world is changing how we view products and even how we market the products. So if you're thinking about marketing, you still need to be working with regulatory and gaining insight to understand the terminology, the right questions to ask, how you present it to your target audience, product development, the products you create, and understanding the markets you're going into. Like, what does that look like? Understanding those right questions. So even packaging. So what information can we put on the packaging based upon the markets? So I think it's very much needed, for post-secondary educational institutions to really incorporate regulatory, because it's something that we all need, to be honest, not just in beauty world, but in any industry, to be frank. You need regulatory for a reason. So I think we really should start to roll this out, not only in beauty, but on a much larger scale, to have regulatory be like an actual mandatory course. It's my opinion, but so we'll see how that goes with other schools. But I think it's really fascinating that you're really immersed the students and the educators, around understanding the right questions to ask and the terminology and how to think differently to really develop a holistic practice around regulatory and quality. So I love that. And so, asking the right questions, I want to get into MOCRA because that's the big topic right now. I went to Cosmoprof, they talked about MOCRA. I go on IBA's webinars, they talk about MOCRA, and it's so many complexities and nuances to it that everybody's like, well, what do I do? How do I make sure I'm compliant with what MOCRA is, rolling out? Do I need to be registered, like the facilities and small businesses? So there's a lot of conversation around MOCRA. So for anybody that's new listening, I would love for you to give a high level explanation of what MOCRA is and why it's so significant within the cosmetic and OTC industry.
Yeah, so Mocra is essentially first overhaul of its kind of FDA regulation since 1938, right? So this is a big change. This is significant change. This is something that we haven't seen in a very long time. And it was signed by Biden into effect on, what was it, December 29th, 2022. And it gave a variety of deadlines for things that are due. The first deadlines that appeared were 1 year from that day, essentially. So that was December 29th, 2023. My understanding is that some of this was a surprise also to FDA. So when this happened, they were sitting there like, oh shoot, now we have to figure out how to implement this and carry this out. It gave a lot of responsibilities to the FDA to create exactly how this is going to be done. And the regulation has a variety of things. So it's, first of all, there's product listing. So it's sort of like product registrations with the FDA, some very basic stuff with information about the company and ingredients such. And then there is factory or facility listing. So I, by the way, I'm simplifying this very much right now. So sometimes you're like, oh, I'm not the factory, but there's different things that require, you could be the factory if you are a filler or something else. Even if you're not necessarily, making all that bulk. So yeah, there's factory registrations. There's product safety information. Hopefully that's not a surprise to people and you already have product safety information, but they're very clear about they want both product, like finished good testing, but then also raw material safety information. And that was due actually by the 29th of this last year for brands, i.e. the ones listed on the label, those distributed by parties, to have on file. So if you don't have that on file, get that on file or talk to somebody who understands what that means. They also had a lot of people thought FDA had recall authority before then. They don't, they actually didn't. They could put a lot of pressure on you to recall a product and make it in your best interest to recall a product, but now they can actually recall products. So making sure that you have that proper recall SOP. SOP is standard operating procedure, and people are going, what the heck is that? Do I just write something down on a piece of paper? It's very formalized. If you've ever been in a factory and looked at like their good manufacturing manuals, very formalized procedures that are written in a certain way that FDA wants. We also have, oh, adverse event and serious adverse event, tracking and the reporting for serious adverse events. And again, so you would need SOPs, standard operating procedures, to collect customer complaints, to track those adverse events, and to report as needed what are considered serious adverse events. Now, cosmetic drugs like sunscreens and other type products like that, they already had that requirement, but there is a separate definition of what that serious adverse event is for cosmetics. So you can't just simply take, if you are happening to do your, if you're doing those sunscreens already, take that SOP and just use it for your cosmetics. It does have to be altered some to make sure that you are doing it accordingly to what is needed for the FDA for cosmetics. And then there's labeling requirements. There's some updates to labeling. And then there's going to be GMP requirements. So that's good manufacturing practices. Hopefully, again, you're already doing that. But this is now something that's going to have to be formalized. And I think, what is it, within 2 years of enactment? So that was from that, December 29th, 2022 date, they're going to say FDA is going to finalize what they want out of that. And then I think like you have another year or something like that to actually get into place. And that's not something simple. This is not only how those huge quality, when I say huge quality manuals, I mean this thick, like thousands of pages of formalized SOPs, but also how the facility is put together, et cetera. So things that you need to plan well in advance, they've already issued draft guidance for this. So it's very similar to what is currently required in the EU. It's almost identical, in fact. So you need to start preparing now. Stuff that has come into place. We had the serious adverse event SOP that came into place December 29th. The labeling requirements came into place December 29th. The recall, technically the product listing and the factory registration, that was December 29th, but they're not going to enforce it until beginning of July, essentially. So I'm worried now that some companies are just delaying. In fact, I've seen some folks delaying getting, say, me the information to actually do these listings. I can't do everything all at once. I am happy that I only had to do certain things by the end of this year, because having to have had all of that done, it would have been, oh my gosh, everybody would have been so behind. But if you don't understand what that means, make sure you're looking into that, or make sure you're working with somebody who does understand what it is, and make sure you're collecting that information so it's ready to do those registrations and listings. Because actually the portal to do it with the FDA is now open. That opened only a few weeks ago, and you can do it now, whether it's you or your regulatory person or a consultant, etc.
Nice. So guys, Ariana just gave us a lot of information, and we're going to break this down a little bit too, because how I mentioned that, no, don't apologize. And I want to have the conversation, because there are so many nuances and complexities with MOCRA. And so just thinking about like product listing, right? You know, if the brands, we'll start there. So like with product listing, what can brands be doing now to ensure that they have their product officially listed? Let's start there.
So first, you want to understand what that means. If you don't understand what that means, maybe just you want to take a look at the regulation. If you're like, forget that, that doesn't sound like me at all, talk to a regulatory person. And they will be able to guide you to start getting that information together, because it is some detailed stuff. It's probably going to come down to putting together some sort of chart for whoever is going to be inputting this information into the system. I've worked with it. So at least for me, it was a little buggy at first, but that's how anything starts, right? So I don't expect to immediately do it necessarily. Give yourself buffer time to understand how to do it. Give yourself time to collect this information, et cetera.
Okay. And if brands would prefer not to input all their product listing information in the system, they could hire you and your team to help with organizing that process and getting their products listed, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Giving my customers a list of information I need. Easiest way for me to utilize it to input it into the system.
Okay. Nice. So now if brands are starting to work with contract manufacturers, let's just say for non-OTC products, you know, what information should brands be asking the facilities to ensure that they are registered with, you know, in compliance with MOCRA?
Well, they're going to have a registration number. There's some information that goes along with it. And also, like I mentioned, you're going to want to make sure that they're in line with your recall procedure, your serious adverse event stuff, the GMP, all that stuff you need to start preparing. But from them, for the most part, you're not going to need too much, at least for the product listing. It's just a number. So they have to have already done their registrations. So they have to at least understand the concept of what that is.
Okay, nice. So now safety testing information. So you mentioned like there's two parts of it. So the product and then also the raw material. So how can brands ensure that they have all the product safety information, safety testing, et cetera? And what does that testing look like to make sure that they're registering the product and also the raw materials?
So this information, they aren't going to have to register it anywhere, but it is files they have to keep on file that FDA can ask them for at any given point. And then there's a quick turnaround time that they have to deliver that information. Mm-hmm. So they are required. They should just have like little files of this stuff for each product. You know, there's standard testing that comes along. It varies depending upon the product for safety testing. So it's hard to say exactly what, but it could be anywhere from in-use testing. It could be RAPT. It could be ocular irritation. You know, it can be PET. It's a variety, and it could be a variety of other things depending upon what we're talking about for finished goods. For raw materials, here, when I'm saying this stuff, by the way, FDA has not made it clear. They haven't said, you need this test, right? They more just said, you have to have the proper tests and the proper safety information, right? So they will determine it when they see it, if such an issue comes up with your product, right? So it does make it a little complex, but we do have a variety of tools in the industry to use of places you can find raw material information. Obviously, raw material houses are good places to be asking for some of that. But again, if you don't understand what all these different things are, make sure you're working with your regulatory person to ask the right questions. Because if you don't ask the right questions, you're not going to get the right information.
We remember how I said, guys, you need a regulatory specialist as like the first person on your team for this reason, as you know, as we're talking about today. So much to it. Okay. And so when you talked about being able to keep your respective files, you know, for safety testing for the products and the raw materials, to your awareness, if some of the startup brands are using Dropbox or Google Drive, you know, and have to quickly get access to that, but they don't have a big server like a Fortune 500 company, do you think them housing those files like in those respective cloud storage facilities are okay right now? Or are we starting to see certain requirements or recommendations for like systems and how they house those files to give to FDA?
Right now FDA has some, there's certain information. They have actually a system, and I don't recall what it is offhand, but it is, you know, needed for exactly how the systems they do want you to have stuff housed on. And I don't recall the name offhand, but if anybody has any questions about that, I can look that all up. I have all that info, and that's, yeah, such.
Okay. And all of Ariana's information will be down in the show notes for you all to get in contact with her so she can help you and also share the respective location to house those files as well. So next one. Recall SOP, and then you talked about adverse events and serious adverse events SOPs. So a lot of startup and independent brands may slowly start to be incorporating SOPs. Some may not, neither here or there, but you're learning today on this podcast. And so what are some best practices, you know, with brands that are starting off to really start adopting and utilizing SOPs to have that recall SOP in place, to have the adverse event SOP in place, and then also be able to share with their contract manufacturer facility as well?
They should understand how these are written, how these are put together, or work with somebody that does. Right now, you know, especially when it comes to MOCRA, but also from a, you know, obviously when you're approaching something, highest thing is really almost always safety, right? So being able to properly track, collect, and report those serious adverse events. So we're really talking about SOP for customer complaints, customer complaint tracker, where that information is. We're really talking about a defective materials investigation, how to investigate and properly resolve any issues like this. And then like a recall SOP. So these are the types of things right now you really want to make sure that you have in place, because you were supposed to have them in place by December 29th. Now don't panic and go, okay, I'm just going to ignore that. It is better late than never, especially if it's, you know, only by a few weeks or something like that. And perhaps you could dig back to see if, did we receive anything that sounds like that, you know, over the phone or whatever in these last few weeks. They can't be written instantly, but it's also something you need to train, you know, whoever is handling this, collecting this information. And don't worry, whoever you work with, if this is all, you know, they'll walk you through it. Don't worry about it. But okay. The most important step to take is to ask the right people to help you get this done.
Yes, absolutely. And from my understanding in some of our prior conversations, you help with, you know, really adopting the best practices and drafting the SOPs. If a brand did not know the best way to draft an SOP, how can they get engaged with you to really speak with you? You understand the nature of their product, the actual goals, markets, et cetera, to help them with drafting out the recall SOP, adverse reaction, SOP, and just good manufacturing practices.
I mean, they would just contact me, say that they need some help with that area, but or even MOCRA, say we need help with MOCRA, and I'll say, okay, do you have this, and I'll help you track out whatever the deadlines are and get those SOPs. And so the same thing, I give, you know, instructions, here's how to implement the SOPs, here's how to house the SOPs, here's how to train on the SOPs. So, you know, everything can hopefully be as simple as possible.
Okay. I like it. I like it. And so since we talked a little bit about what Mocra is, things that you need to have in place, I know there are some exclusions under Mocra as well, I think for some of the small businesses. So can you share a little bit about what some of those exclusions are that's currently under Mocra and what does that mean for small businesses and brands?
Yeah, and I don't recall the exact cutoff, but it is fairly low. And so far, by the way, if you are a small business, you can still comply with all this. Thing is, I would highly recommend it, first of all, for safety purposes, for just like good, you don't want, I mean, for safety purposes, but also branding purposes, for PR purposes, you don't want bad things to happen with your products since they haven't done the proper things and have taken the proper safety measures, quality control, quality assurance, you know, regulatory, et cetera. And then your brand explodes anyways. But also companies grow out of nowhere, unexpectedly. And, you know, this is best case scenario too. You built this to grow, right? And you don't want to just all of a sudden fall into that box where maybe you're only selling, I don't know, 20 pieces of product a year, to something where you're, oh my gosh, we got a big order from this huge retailer and shoot, we have to overhaul the entire, you don't want to be in that position. That's a bad, you want it to already be kind of moving. And I've actually been inside the FDA system for registrations and you can actually, there's a checkbox saying that you are a small business for now at least. And that would be much easier to change and uncheck than to have to start from scratch if suddenly you fall out of that exemption for a small business.
Okay. And so with the small, like what would be deemed, how would you be deemed as a small business in the portal? Is it based on revenue, based upon when you started the brand?
It's revenue, but also there are certain things that still, like eye area products, I think was one of the things that you, if you still make that, you don't meet the exception. So there's all sort of like stipulations, but yeah, it is revenue based.
Okay. So what if I'm you creating, say, for example, I'm creating a new skincare line. This is one of my favorite examples. I'm creating a skincare line and I want to have a 3-piece regimen kit where I have a cleanser, a toner, and a moisturizer, hypothetically. And I want to start registering my products now to be compliant, get ahead of the deadlines. I am a small business. I'm just starting off. I haven't marketed my business, but I'm predicting I'm going to be under the $1 million revenue to start. But with those high level examples, number one, as a small business, I'm under the revenue requirement. But if I have not officially launched my product into the market, do I still need to start registering my product now? Or can I wait a certain amount of time after I start marketing the product?
There is, like, again, I don't have these exact numbers memorized, but there is sort of like within so-and-so time, you're supposed to, you know, I can't remember if it's like weeks or a couple months or something like that. But yeah, so there is a little bit of time. So say you're going, I'm just learning about Mocra now and I'm launching these three products now. Should I just put, because honestly, so many people say, you know, all this felt so overwhelming to me that I ignored it. And then that I came back later and it is much better to do it now. The stuff doesn't happen instantly. You know, it isn't also like you come to me and I go button press done. You know, it's actually, these are in-house jobs, regulatory and quality. And these people work all day, every day. Right. Then there's a reason, because there's work to be done to kind of complete these things. So just do it, you know, and I think, also, okay, great. You understand that there's Mocra, but we may be talking about this a little bit more later, but this isn't the only regulation. Everybody's hyper focused on Mocra right now. This is one regulation. And I'm just talking about the US here. There's other regulations in other countries, of course, but what, there's like 70 or 80 different ones you really got to be aware of. So don't just think it's that. One of the things, since I'm very familiar with helping companies grow from small to big, is kind of making sure that this stuff is, you know, wrangled to begin with. It's much easier to wrangle to begin with. I'm much cheaper to work with to wrangle at the start than I am to work with later on when a problem explodes. For instance, like there's a regulation in California called Prop 65. And some people may have heard of it. Some people may have seen the signs in businesses, those Prop 65 warnings, but it's a very difficult to comply with regulation. People say, oh, we just told our vendor to comply with it. And I'm like, that is not sufficient. There's other things you got to do. Frankly, there's something quite simple that I can work with companies that only takes a couple hours really to do to set it up. And if it's done, great. But I've worked with companies for 3 to 6 months trying to clean up these messes. And so versus a few hours you would have had to pay me in front and all the headache and the race, you know, against time to save your brand, frankly, I'll do those jobs, but they're not my favorite. I don't like when everybody's stressed out. It's not good quality of life for anybody. Let's fix it at the start. It's so much better. And so that's one of the other things. If you're starting off right now, it's so important to put some of your investment into regulatory and quality. And you're going to thank yourself down the road, you know, to at least work with somebody who understands what is the highest risk areas first. Don't quote me. You do have to do everything. You have to comply with everything. But if we're going to start on that process, let's at least, you know, since everything takes time, let's get that highest risk stuff pulled in, wrangled in. So at least you have, you can sleep a little bit better at night.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think everybody is so hyper-focused on MOCRA, right? You know, that I want to ask you this question. What are some misconceptions about MOCRA?
I think that one of the first ones is that MOCRA is the only regulation that we have to deal with. And and frankly, it's funny. People said, oh, your business is going to be exploding this year. It's actually died down just because people became so hyper-focused only on MOCRA. They're not asking me about the other regulations. They're kind of like thinking, I only have to do this versus like, there's state regulations, there's other federal regulations, there's other things that are, you got to handle. But also one of the other things, a lot of people think when FDA at the end of last year delayed the enforcement for the compliance of product listings and factory registrations to the beginning of June this year, they thought all December 29th requirements were delayed, and they were not. I keep telling this to people and they're like, they almost look at me or listen to me or say, no, that's not what I thought. You know, it's just kind of like a panic mode of like, oh shoot. Or I think some people almost like don't even like, they put it out of their heads because they go, oh my God. Yeah, there's other things that did come into compliance at the end of this last year. Remember that recall SOP, that customer, you know, having to deal with the adverse event, serious adverse events, all the SOPs that are associated and processes associated with that. The labeling compliance requirements and the product ingredient safety files, all that stuff is supposed to be in place. And it's not done overnight. That doesn't mean panic. Work with somebody who can take a lot of this off your plate if this is something you're worrying about right now. Work with somebody who's just going to put this stuff together for you, or at least give you a plan how to deal with it if you can't afford to pay them to do all of it. So at least you can chip away at it, you know? So it's better to start now because there's other stuff coming up. This isn't the only stuff. Then of course there's the product registrations and that really needs to, and there's the factory registrations and there's the GMPs and then there's other MOCRA stuff down. There's a few other things too that we didn't even get into. There's the animal testing they talked about. I think what was it? Phthalates. And so, you know, there's other stuff coming. You really got to start chipping away at that block.
Guys, you hear it right here on the Product and Packaging Powerhouse. You need to have a regulatory consultant on your team. Okay. It does not matter what scale of business you're in, because you need to start complying with these requests and deadlines now. I know it seems like you have a lot of time, but actually it is right here and it takes time. Like Ariane mentioned, it does not happen overnight. It is not just the easy staples button that we're pressing right now. Requires a little bit of work behind it, you know, so definitely get engaged with Ariana and her team to help you with becoming compliant, helping with the registration, helping to craft your SOPs, and also understanding MOCRA is not the only regulation you should be focused on. There's so many other regulations and things in place, state and federally, that you should be focusing on as well. And so that's a perfect segue to really talk about, you know, some of the state regulations. I know you talked a little bit high level, Prop 65, you know, that's really a big one. But what are some other regulations that brands should also be focusing on in addition to MOCRA as well?
Okay, so I was trying to figure out, I know that you wanted to talk about this on this podcast, and I'm like 70 or 80 different ones. There's a lot, right? So I thought, okay, what is the best thing to do here? And just to not overwhelm as much as I can, because I think that's one of the biggest challenges I face, you know, as a regulatory person, and I would do that. We'll talk about some of what is just some stuff that's appeared recently.
Okay.
So what do we got here? And I have, bear with me, because I don't have this stuff memorized. Nobody does. Anybody says
nobody
that.
Does.
I have, I'm actually referencing update I gave that I'm about to give actually at SEC coming up. Also, I'm in their cosmogram with this information. But okay, California just did a bunch of stuff. They are updating their safer consumer products regulations. What's that? California has a bunch of different regulations that sound all really similar. It's like safer cosmetics, safer consumer products, safer new fragrance, safe, you know, it's like, so it's like, oh my gosh, it's hard to even differentiate. This one essentially is a bunch of chemicals that are listed that it's not that you're not allowed to have them, but if you do have them in your product, you're supposed to, as that person, that distributed by party on the label, right? You know, the brand, essentially, you are supposed to be listing them into the system. And then they're publicly available in the system. A lot of people were afraid of this regulation at first because they were thinking, oh, consumers were going to look at this and go, oh my gosh, we don't understand this. Why are they saying that there are these, you know, ingredients in here? And so far, you know, there hasn't been any huge backlash or anything. Nobody's freaking out over it because it's also not clear exactly what the risk is for this. And there's, everybody's done their listings. There's, you know, you look at it, there's just about a bunch of them in there, just like, you know, hundreds of different brands, thousands, maybe even. And, you know, they just have done their proper listings and this is required. Okay. One of the other ones that's kind of new in California is the Fragrance and Flavor Right to Know Act. So this is for products that have fragrances or flavors in them, like maybe you have lip gloss and it's cherry flavored, or maybe you have a lotion and it's cherry scented, or maybe you have an ingredient in there that you're using for something else, but it also could have a fragrance component to it. So if there's a presence of certain chemicals inside these ingredients that are both intentionally fragrances or flavors, or not intentionally fragrances or flavors, so maybe they're not even listed as fragrance or flavor on the label, you're supposed to be reporting it to the state of California. So that's another one. Okay, but California, and there's several others in California.
Right.
There's some packaging stuff. People don't think of packaging regulation. There's like recycling. Yes. Symbols and requirements for packaging content, all this different type of stuff. So if you're a packaging supplier, or if you're working with packaging suppliers, which you must, who isn't?
Yes.
unless maybe you have those products that are like soaps or something, I don't know, individually sold, but you need to be talking to these folks and make sure they're in compliance with the proper regulations for all this. So, okay. What's going on? Oregon has some stuff too. They have a ban on certain ingredients they just put into place. Let's see, Washington, they're doing something actually quite similar to California where you have to like report certain ingredients. There's another one where it's like, if there's a presence of certain ingredients in California, and it looks like, I think Washington is doing the same thing where you have to, if there is an ingredient that's, or not even an ingredient, a chemical. And so I want to make the distinction here between the two, right? Sometimes there are residual chemicals inside of an ingredient name. So it isn't necessarily listed on the label. That's just how it is, right? There's little teeny tiny things that could be in anything. Sometimes one ingredient can create another thing. If that is present in your product, that you have to either remove it by a certain date, or you have to do a safer, you have to say why there's no safer alternative, and you have to do this whole scientific like thing, like report to them. So I know. So that's another fun one that's going on. Nevada has a new one for feminine hygiene products. Okay. I know that's kind of, we see a lot of those products coming up right now, which is wonderful, but that means there's more regulation in different states. Maine just amended their PFA regulation. So those, the polyfluorinated something or other, forgive me, I don't know the exact name myself, but it's like poly PFA ingredients. And right now there's all sorts of regulation appearing both federally and locally in different states for that. And so Maine is jumping on there too. So yeah, that's just a snippet of kind of what we have seen recently. And every day I wake up and kind of see something new. I was like, oh, there's another new thing on chemical on Prop 65. There's another, you know, this stuff happens all the time. And it is impossible to stay on top of it. But fortunately, there are people out there like myself who revel in looking this stuff up, and we can help figure out management plans for you to keep on top of this and to manage this type of information without you having to stick your nose in a book all day long and look at regulation.
Yeah. And to be honest, so our background, we have similar backgrounds. So you have a degree in biochemistry. I have a degree in chemistry, took biochem, loved it. And so even with my background, you know, there's no way that I would sit there and look in a 1,000-page manual just to stay abreast of everything going on, because it's so much. And it's like, well, where do I focus my efforts on? And anything written like in that type of language, you're like, okay, you mentioned in section 1-5 that it says this, but now I'm in 2-2. I'm like, what in the world? Like, I don't understand. Yeah. So I'm with you. It's like, there's no way that I would sit there and look in the book. I would just hire somebody and be like, please just take the headache off of me, off the brands that I work with, because my specialty is packaging and project management. I can do it day in, day out, but I'm asking those right questions even to my suppliers in my network to understand how they're starting to assess like the packaging regulations, how they're assessing, you know, the type of recyclability for the materials that's utilized, speaking with the CMs to understand, you know, what is the actual production and how do you think about the carbon emissions, to even the brands, where is this product going to be sold at? You know, is it D2C? Is it e-com? Is it retail? Is it US? Is it Canada? Is it international? Because there's so many different things that we have to think about, you know, to produce this finished good product. But I tell the people, they ask me, do you know regulatory? I know of it. I know how to spell it, but I do not know all the different regulations and guidelines to really counsel you on it. That's why I bring regulatory specialists on my team, you know, to make sure that they're properly counseling my clients and myself, because there's so much. And a lot of times brands be like, oh, I just need regulatory for product. No, you need them for packaging too, because now we have packaging EPR, extended producer recyclability, you know, where 4 states have passed, you know, this respective bill. But I know here in the state of Georgia, where I reside, we do not recycle products and content like California. We have some regulations and such, but it's not as stringent as like California, Washington, Oregon, Maine. We're slowly getting there, but to that point, you need a regulatory specialist on your team at the end of the day. So, and understanding the right questions to ask, you know, and really think through as a brand owner, what product am I creating? Is it non-OTC? Is it OTC? Different requirements. What type of product? How am I going to be producing the product into the market? Is that US? Is that Canada? Is it international? Am I going into retail? What type of packaging am I using? What information needs to be on the product labels to be compliant? You know, there's so much to it. And I'm so glad, Ariana, that you are here to help provide insight into this, because I cannot do it. You know, and I tell brands, it really takes a team at the end of the day. You know, you trying to do it on your own, you can do it, but how long do you want to take to do it? And how much time do you want to invest into it? Because time is money at the end of the day. Just invest 100%. The money, hire somebody that knows the, you know, the intricacies of regulations and quality, helping you to understand best good manufacturing practices, helping you to develop the SOPs. That's what Ariana is there for. So guys, All of her information is going to be in the show notes for you all, so you can get engaged with her, hire her and her team to help you be compliant, take the frustration and headache off yourself, and just work with an expert and let them do it. Okay. At the end of the day, that's really what it comes down to, you know, because everybody's focused on MOCRA, but as she mentioned, that's only one part of regulations that you really need to be thinking through. So I'm so glad that you mentioned that in our conversation today. And so since you talked about, you know, questions to ask, you have an ongoing series, I believe, on LinkedIn called Questions to Ask Your Regulatory Staff and Consultants. So share a little bit about like some of the questions and the content people can expect to read on your ongoing series.
Yeah. So this series basically is a short article. So it's a quick read, by the way. You know, I'm not going to put you through a long read. I have maybe 40 or 50 different ones up there right now, but I try and tackle things that people don't know what to ask, right? Like most people do want to be compliant. They want to do the right thing, but they just don't know how. And they don't know what to ask of the consultant or their regulatory staff to make sure that it is executed to what it's supposed to be. So I tackle a lot of misconceptions, but I also tackle hot topics. What are, you know, what does one need to do to be compliant with the new FDA can now recall products? And what does one need to do in order to be compliant with collecting adverse events and serious adverse events? And then, so those are the right questions to ask, right? A lot of people just say, I don't even know how to phrase that, or I don't know what to do. And so I really give that information. Then I also give some small tidbits of these answers too, right? Because I don't want to go on for like pages and pages about it. But because that would be overwhelming, but at least it gives you a like, oh, okay, here's what I can expect when I start asking these questions for myself. One other thing I did want to notice, point out about misconceptions is that a lot of folks will say, oh, we just told our vendors to handle regulatory compliance for us. And I'd say that that is a common big mistake because, first of all, not all vendors have people who understand all regulations. There's a lot, and you know, hopefully they do. Sometimes they don't even have somebody in house. Sometimes they're using outside consultant. Not to say that we're not, you know, giving them good information, but there's a lot to be done, right? There's a lot of day to day, and unless the right questions or right information is obtained from them, or the right things are looked into, things can easily be overlooked on their end. Also, you have responsibilities as brands, if you're the brand. There are things they can't do for you, like labeling your product properly with the proper information, like reporting these chemicals and packaging information to different states. You know, maybe you do have them doing your product listings, but did you ask them? And do you have the proper information from them? Do you know that they can do it properly? These are things that you got to be careful of, because you're not going to be covered just saying to your vendor, comply. There will be things missed unless you're able to collect the proper information and make sure that they are looking into the proper things.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point. And so I have one question for you. So we have an influx of artisans that are on Etsy and similar markets, right? They may be creating the same type of products, you know, so it could be individual soaps that are individually sold to cleansers, all these different type of products. So for the artisans that are maybe creating their own batches at home or in a commercial kitchen or wherever, how do they fall? Do they still have to be compliant? You know, but if they're under the revenue threshold, I can't remember if it's like $1 million revenue or something of that sort, do they still need to be in compliance? You know, and should they start working with a regulatory consultant like yourself as well for their products?
Yes. And short answer, you know, for pieces of MOCRA, they might not have to be for certain things. But there are other regulations that they still have to be in compliance with. And the other thing too is you want to make sure is that you're really understanding safety, because that's not only a huge business liability, but just as a person, you don't want to be putting something out there that could harm someone. So there are certain procedures and things you should understand about how to make your product and test your product to confirm safety elements of your product.
Good to know. Good to know. And I think that's something that's very timely and something that's not really talked about, you know, from that side of the business, because, you know, Fortune 500 companies, they already know, like, okay, we have to have certain things in place, you know, to make sure that we're able to sell our products in respective markets, et cetera. But for the artisans, you know, they're like, oh, that doesn't apply to me. But it's like, no, you still need to be thinking about these things, because at the end of the day, safety is the number one concern for anything, you know, that we apply to our skin, ingest, or anything of that sort. So safety is number one for me. I know for everybody, you know, at the end of the day, for any type of consumer product. And so if you or someone you know is an artisan, start working with a regulatory specialist. You know, we want you all to still create your product and get it out there. We're not saying not to, but we want to make sure that we're assessing the risk level of your products and how you're being, you know, how you're thinking about the safety protocols and the SOPs and everything as well. So there's so much to it, you know, that it's like we can continue to have this conversation on and on all day, because it's like the never ending questions, you know, around regulatory, around MOCRA, around some of the state regulations. Like, how do I make sure I'm being compliant, or thinking about Prop 65 or the other questions? So, guys, all the things that you would need to know to get engaged with Ariana is going to be down in the show notes for you, as well as the link to her respective ongoing series, Questions to Ask a Regulatory Staff or Consultant. I'm going to be tapping into those articles myself. I started to look at the first 10 before our time today. So very insightful. And I cannot wait for us to get engaged on our projects together as well, because regulatory is important. And at the end of the day, we need to be assessing the risk level for the brands to help you with showcasing your product in the marketplace. So I definitely appreciate your insight, Ariana. And so last question I'll ask you before we get into our power round is, at the end of the day, regulatory and quality go hand in hand. What is one piece of advice you would give to brands, regardless of scale of business, that they should be doing right now to ensure that they're starting to think about compliance, regulations, and quality creating their product?
Talk with somebody who knows about compliance and quality, and explain the type of business you have, and ask them, with limited funds and with small business, what is the stuff I should be looking at to take care of to limit my risk first?
I love that. I love that. And so, guys, all of Ariana's information will be down in the show notes for you all, because she's one of my regulatory specialists that I'm going to as well, to make sure that we're focusing on all things for MOCRA, for state and federal regulations. And we didn't even get into international, because that's a whole nother segment, guys, to start tapping into. And so, guys, as we are wrapping up for today's episode, we are going to go ahead and get into our power round. So our power round is 60 seconds, lightning speed, asking our powerhouse guests about some of their favorites. And to give you context of today's power round, Ariana's favorite thing is she loves cats. Okay. So she is an animal lover. Of course, you heard how she created the first regulatory course at FIDM. And then we're also going to ask her about some of her best practices as well. So I'm going to put 60 seconds on the clock. Ariana, you ready?
Sure.
You got this, girl. I think you're going to knock this out the park. All right, 60 seconds is on the clock, and we'll start now. So with your love of cats, if you were to create a product, what would it be?
Well, I think my cats love watching me put on makeup, so I think I would create something that I could put on them too. They especially love the brushes for me to like tickle their nose, something that's safe. I know it's silly, but if you're a true cat lover, like me, little sparkles on their nose or something like that.
Oh, I like that though. I mean, you also have the pet nail polishes right now to help them add a little bit of flair too. I love nails myself, so it's fitting. So in 10 seconds, tell us why more schools should have regulatory courses.
Because currently there's almost no resources for people to learn that this might be the right profession for them.
Okay. What is one of your top tips for new cosmetic startups?
Talk with a regulatory person. I've already said that, but
yeah.
I don't know.
She cannot say that enough, guys. Talk to a regulatory consultant.
At product development, people say when. I say product onset, before you do anything. Maybe that concept you have is super high risk, and you want to know that before you invest too much time and money in it.
It's a valid point. But a lot of times people think regulatory should happen much later downstream. It's like, no, that should really be upfront at the concept stage, in my opinion. So glad to hear we're on the same track there. Okay, last question. Regulatory is critical for products and packaging because fill in the blank.
If you want to not get in trouble, keep people safe, and I don't know, other stuff. Have a lot of fun with quality and regulatory. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. So pretty much to make sure that you're compliant and being able to sell your product, especially with compliance of MOCRA and other state and federal regulations as well.
Yes, you said that excellently.
Perfect. Well, I love that. Well, as we are wrapping up for today's episode, Ariana, share a little bit of how people can get in contact with you to see how they can get engaged with you to help with drafting SOPs, good manufacturing practices, helping to get registered and more through your practice.
You can find me on LinkedIn, Ariana Farina. I think my name's here. You can see it. And also, you can email directly at afarina20@hotmail.com. Do you have that info you can share on the screen?
Yes.
But that's it. Yeah, I'm around. I'm at the SEC meetings here in California giving those regulatory updates. So if you want to meet me in person, I'll be at Makeup in LA, LuxPack. And
Nice.
see you all for all your regulatory and quality needs.
Awesome. And so, guys, all of her information, as I share, will be down in the show notes for you all to get engaged with her, connect with her, check out her ongoing LinkedIn series. Questions to ask a regulatory staff or consultant, because there's so many questions you can ask as well, with the creation of your products. So at the end of the day, regulatory specialists should be one of the team members on your team to assess that you are actually in compliance, and they should be also be part of your team at the conception stage. You want to make sure that your regulatory specialist is helping you to assess your risk level for the products and the packaging that you're creating at the end of the day to ensure that we as everyday consumers are able to enjoy it and know what your product is all about, and also making sure that it's safe for all consumers to enjoy as well. And so, guys, thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode here on the Product and Packaging Powerhouse. Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to all of our platforms. All those different platforms will be down in the show notes, as well as Ariana's information. And so, guys, until next time, make sure you're staying safe and get a regulatory specialist on your team. Talk soon.